This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, December 15th, 2014 edition of Invest Talk. And the title of today's show is Your Mutual Fund Liquid Enough. Is your mutual fund liquid enough? There's some interesting parts of the mutual fund sector that aren't that liquid. And they've been dealing with some hard times recently. They've been dealing with it pretty well, but there's some rules by the SEC that I think everybody should be aware of and understand where what they're worried about and how that might affect any mutual funds you might hold. Now, we welcome you to our Monday edition of Invest Talk, and we're here every weekday to answer your money questions. And we have all sorts of experience levels represented in our audience, so all questions are welcome, beginner to experienced, and our direct line is 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278, and since we're live weekdays, 4 to 5 Pacific time, you can have a two-way conversation with us whenever we are on the air. But you also can call our 24-hour listener line and leave a question, and we will answer it on the next show. Now, today we're going to talk some about mutual funds, but any investing or money topic is on the table. And during this hour, I hope you'll hear some worthwhile information and perhaps maybe get some new ideas or maybe multitude of ideas that you can use and put to work into your practice of managing your own money. Now, the events of the day, changes in the economy, and economic outlook all become reasons to make adjustments to your retirement portfolio. So monitoring and responding is one of the critically important jobs of the investor. The question is, how do you respond? And we have life changes too that cause us to take a second look at where we are in our financial planning and investing life. And, you know, in the earlier years of life, we have things like engagements, marriage, birth of a child, health changes in our income, up or down. And we have to be involved in those day-to-day decisions and those big life changes. And there are all types of life events that can alter your investment outlook, your investment needs, your saving outlook and your savings needs. Then they're not always, you know, good. They could be bad. They could be a divorce. You know, all types of reasons to prompt adjustments. Now, at some point down the road, quantitative easing and manipulated interest rates will be less and less of a factor in the financial landscape. And we'll be talking about rising interest rates and how investors need to make adjustments as that happens. And these changes can improve your position and helping you profit in all market conditions. That's ultimately the goal, is having the skills and expertise to profit in all market conditions. Now, how will these changes impact the particular companies in your portfolio? What sectors will find higher interest rates favorable? Now, part of the processing of managing your investing dollars is looking ahead and anticipating and coming up with what-if scenarios. And understand, if this happens, these companies will benefit, and vice versa. So we're here to help you shape and tune your investing plan and your mindset. Now, what questions do you have about any money issues? We want to hear from you. Let's pick up the phone now and get to the Q&A portion of the program. 888-992-4278 is how to reach us 24 hours a day.
Hey, Steve and Justin. This is David from Texas. I had a question about investing in property. I have some friends that swear it's the best thing since sliced bread, and I was kind of interested in what they were saying, but I really don't have any idea how to calculate a return on investment. What specifically should I be looking at if I was going to, say, buy some residential property to have as cash flow for retirement? Thank you, guys. Love what you do. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Well, your return on investment is there's many types of ways to calculate it. But simply, you know, you just got to look at what type of positive cash flow are you creating with your with that investment in the property. How much are you renting it out for? How much are you paying for overhead? Not just your mortgage, but taxes, upkeep of the home, those type of things. And you know, I think that it does work in certain areas of the country. You know, every real estate market in the country is, I think, better than others when it comes to investing as for rental properties. I'm not a big fan of California, these high, you know, high priced areas of the country, because usually the rental income is not making up for the cost of owning it. Now the Midwest, where prices are cheap, maybe, you know, in Texas, the South, where prices are low and you can still get decent rents and positive cash flow, you know, that's a much better way to go about it. Nobody should be investing in real estate for the price appreciation. That should be secondary. It's always a nice inflation hedge, because usually real estate prices go up about 1% or 2% above inflation over the long term, which isn't, you know, dramatic. You know, a lot of people think that, oh, you know, prices went up 10% last year, it's going to go up 10%. No. 2015 is going to be a much more subdued real estate market. And it's in the long term. You should always think of real estate as a cash flow game, not a price appreciation game. It's where everyone got ahead of themselves back in the mid-2000s. Everyone thought that real estate was about buying today and selling it for 20% higher in a year or two. That's not the way anybody should be thinking about real estate. I don't care what market it is. Ultimately, over the long term, real estate prices go up with incomes, income growth. Why? Because what do people need to pay for a home? They need income. They need to be able to pay the mortgage on that home. And if they don't have rising incomes, it's going to be hard for them to pay a higher price or a higher mortgage for a particular home. But people seem to ignore that fact and the long-term statistics about housing. So, you know, while your friends might like it, and it might be a good investment, you have to do a lot of due diligence. And also, owning real estate isn't a piece of cake. Things break, and guess what? You're responsible for them. If a renter walks out on you, doesn't pay you rent, guess what? You're taking the hit. Now, is that the majority, you know, the majority of homes? Is there big problems with the renters and problems with the home? No. But it's a lot higher percentage than most people realize. And being a, I actually have a friend. He bought a house in the bubble era, and he has owned it through the downturn and the upswing in housing. And he decided he didn't want to live there anymore, and he started renting it out because he's still a little bit upside down on the home. And he's renting it and covering his costs, basically. But he had to put a new dishwasher in, you know, some electrical things happen, plumbing things happen, and he's spent, in the past year, he spent, I think it was like $3,000 to $4,000 just to keep up with the home. And that's, you know, the rent, I think, is a couple grand a month. So he's taken 2 full months of rent and put it back in the home, and that's, you're not really getting much out of it. It's not like the price of the value of the home is changing because you you know, made the dishwasher, you know, upgrade the dishwasher or fixed a pipe. So realize, while real estate can be a good part of an investing portfolio, it should not be your only asset class. And it's shocking how many little people learned their lesson back in, you know, the bubble areas. You know, we had some people on this show calling, should I take a mortgage out, second mortgage out, invest in another property? And we would say, no, pay down your mortgage. People thought we were idiots. Well, you see what happened. Everyone went bankrupt because guess what? They had 15 homes because they thought they would go up 20% a year. They didn't understand the fundamentals. So it's complex, but you have to be experienced, and don't let short-term price appreciation influence your decision-making. You should understand the fundamentals and make decisions based on that. Now, we want to hear your questions. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now with your money topics on Invest Talk. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, mutual funds are intended to be mom and pop financial products whose investments can be sold off quickly, right? You want to be liquid. You want to sell them whenever you can. But is your mutual fund liquid enough? That's our main talking point today, but I have some other things that I want to touch on as well, and hopefully this sparks some ideas for you to get in on the conversation and get you to engage with us and talk about what's on your mind. It could be about these things. It could be about whatever has been bugging you when it comes to financial matters. Now, the first thing I want to discuss is the Empire State Index. That was a report that came out today. That was probably the biggest economic report that came out today. And it was a kind of a surprising fall, kind of interesting. So just want to give you a heads up on that and discuss that a little bit. And I also want to touch on oil. Obviously, oil prices are taking it on the chin. Pretty dramatically, and this is affecting the stock market as a whole. And the big question is, what are the wide-ranging ramifications when it comes to jobs, the broad market as a whole, you know, the global economy, geopolitical concerns? What type of bank exposure is it? Remember, when banks had a big problem with the housing. When the housing market started to fall apart a little bit in 07, people weren't really that worried about it. They didn't realize the wide-ranging ramifications. And so the big question is, how will this, the tumble in oil prices, hurt banks? And then small business 401ks. How will they look in 10 years? What are the trends? And we're going to talk about that. I think that will be a nice broad range of topics for us to discuss. Now, do you feel stocks exposed to emerging markets are particularly vulnerable given the political and economic challenges out there? What do you have on your mind? Let's talk about it. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein, and this is Invest Talk. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Steve and Justin want you to know that you can think of them as a ready resource for answers. They devote a portion of their day to communicating with our listeners, answering their questions, and the idea is to give you the tools to make better decisions about your money. If you have a question that you'd like answered directly, maybe you don't want to ask it on the podcast, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they'll get you an answer.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Don't hesitate to call us with your questions or share your investing experience. What are some of the lessons you've learned along the way? Tell us about the mix in your portfolio. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us anytime.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Frank and calling from Walnut Creek. I want you to take a look at a company called Generic Holdings, Inc., and its symbol is GNRC, George Nancy Richard Charlie. It's a manufacturer of generators, oftentimes powered by natural gas, and looks like it might be a backdoor way to invest in problems that the grid may pose in the future. Talk to you later. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, he's looking at Generic Holdings. This is in the electric power equipment sector. They manufacture standby power generators and components for residential, industrial, and commercial markets. The biggest issue here is that earnings and revenues are falling. You have earnings down 27% year over year in 2014. Last quarter, they're down 22%. Earnings or revenue fell 3%. And they have a lot of debt, 371% debt-to-equity ratio. That's kind of a little steep, or I would say very steep for my liking. One of the positives is that they have positive cash flow, so and they have been paying down some of that debt. But that leverage, you know, the amount of debt on their balance sheet is still pretty high, and that worries me. So, and in a sector that's kind of cyclical with earnings falling and revenue falling, while not, you know, super dramatic, it's definitely worrisome. So I would say I'm not a big fan of this name. It's historically where it trades is around where it's at, so it's not super cheap from a historical earnings perspective. And, you know, while it's nice that, you know, natural gas prices are down, there might be some more demand for these type of generators, I just don't see a bit. I'm not that worried about the grid. I mean, you were talking about problems with the grid. You know, there always could be problems, but I'm not seeing any major issue. Should we modernize it? Yeah, probably, but I wouldn't put stock in this name with this amount of debt, with falling revenue, falling earnings, and, you know, stock, it's still not that cheap. So I would hold off and wait a little bit longer. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That's how you get through to ask your question now. And I think we have another caller staging up right now. And let's go to Brian in New Jersey. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How you doing, Justin?
Doing well. What can I do for you?
Good. NGLS. I know Steve. I've heard Steve talk about it in the past, and I think you guys have even owned it at one time. I was wondering what you thought about it at this value.
Yeah, this is Targa Resource Partners, NGLS, as in Sam. Do you own it? Or are you just looking to buy it, or what?
I was just looking at it because I saw that it's come down quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a masculine partnership engaged in gathering, processing, fractionization, storage, transportation, and sale of natural gas and natural gas liquids. Yields about 7.6%. Earnings are supposed to fall about 10% next year. So that's a little worrisome. And they also, this is another one that has a lot of debt, which is worrisome as well. But they are pretty profitable. They've been paying down that debt, which is good. Are you looking to buy this in, what type of account are you looking to buy this in?
I would be looking at like a long-term hold, maybe in like an IRA or something, you know, get the dividend for years to come.
Yeah, one thing you have to realize with these masculine partnerships, you shouldn't own them in an IRA or a 401k, any tax deferred. If you get over, I think it's $1,000 in dividends a year, you have to file a separate tax return. So they're kind of a pain in the butt. So I maybe in an individual account where you would be taxed normally as usual. Either way, then I think it's okay. I think this has come down to a pretty good value. Could it go a little bit lower? Absolutely, I think it could. But I do think that oil stocks are very close to kind of at least an intermediate term bottom. I don't know if it's the final bottom. I would much rather pick it up a little bit lower because I do think it will probably go a little bit lower. probably around $36 a share. That's where my, okay, it's really close to some good support. It's cheap. It's oversold. That's where I would love to buy it. Right now, it's consolidated here for a few days, and I think it's probably going to break that $40 level. And so I would put my purchase price order, my limit order, at around $36 a share.
Great. I appreciate your help tonight, Justin.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for calling. Now, if you'd like to revisit the chart lessons or record webinars or special watch lists, you can do that if you're an InvestTalk Insider. I invite you to sign up. It's free, and you can do that now on InvestTalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and I'm here to answer your money questions right now at 888-992-4278.
Does anybody successfully time the market? Why do people keep trying? Or what's your question? Why not ask it now on InvestTalk?
Let's go to Ron in Palo Alto. How you doing, Ron?
Hey, how you doing? I have a question about Google... G-O-O-G-L.
Okay.
I'm just trying to own it, own some Google, but I'm not sure if it's still going down or is it a good entry point.
Well, it is definitely still going down. It's in a downtrend now. I would say it's officially in a downtrend, but very close to it. It's now broke its lows from October, while the market is above those lows. So it's relatively weaker than the overall market. And, you know, I would say you're probably going to have some more downside of Google. While it's nearing some support here, you know, if it breaks this, I could easily see this head into the 400s. And ultimately, I think a good price to pick this up is at about 425, 430. That's where I'd say, okay, this has gotten to a good longer-term support, and this is where you start stepping in. But I think it's a little bit too early at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Ron. That was Google. There's two symbols now. There's two different class of shares. There's just the old-school Goog, G-O-O-G. That's the C shares, C class. And then there's Google L, which is the A shares. I would just use the A shares, if you're going to buy Google. Now, our talking point today is about the mutual fund industry and how they may have faced some new rules, because on Thursday, Mary Jo White, the chairwoman of the SEC, told a conference organized by the New York Times / Deal Book that the agency was undertaking a comprehensive review of the mutual fund sector. Now, typically, mutual funds are tended to be very liquid, and you know. But lately, a lot of them have been making bets that might be hard to get out of, especially in difficult market conditions. And Mary Jo White says, a fund that does not manage liquidity risk in its portfolio could have difficulty meeting redemptions if it came under stress. Now, mutual funds do face caps now on illiquid assets. They can only hold about 15% of their portfolio in illiquid assets. And by illiquid, they mean assets that couldn't be sold and receive the cash within 7 days. The fund received that cash within 7 days. And they're worried about this. He's a little bit worried about this. And the biggest sector area of the mutual industry that is worrying the market right now is the floating rate debt market, also called leverage loan market, bank loan market, a lot of different names, but they're all one and the same. Now, the current rules that govern the mutual fund industry are more than 20 years old. But these leverage loan funds are relatively new. On average, investors who own the debt, this type of debt, leveraged loan debt, have to wait 2 weeks and sometimes a lot more to actually collect the cash from selling those loans. And that doesn't fit within that 7-day rule. And that's a little bit worrisome for the SEC. Now, the fund companies say, well, we have credit lines, we can cover that cash, and we'll get that money, and it's all going to be okay. And they also say, you know, this year so far, $24 billion have been flowing out of this leveraged loan sector. And nothing has really been a problem. And this has been a very weak part of the market. And the reason why these have been popular is because floating rate, a lot of people think when the interest rates go up, you'll get higher interest rate, which is true for the most part. But they also are low rated. They're kind of, it's kind of junk debt. And that's why they're kind of illiquid, because there's, whether you like it or not, whether you understand the industry or not, most of the loans that are out there are that they're invested by mutual funds, ETFs, institutions. They're investing in investment grade bonds, not junk bonds. Even though there's been a craze getting into junk bonds, and obviously that's coming off the table in a lot of ways. But there's a lot of worry in this sector. So if you own any of them, understand that, you know, this is an area where if there's panic, it's an illiquid market, and you could take some pretty big hits. A lot bigger than you expect. And the SEC is worried about this, and I think you should be too. I don't think it's a good place to be, even especially if you look at the recent performance. It's been pretty dire. Anyway, let's move on to the oil industry, something that's kind of related to what's going on in the junk bond market. And, you know, the market today was not good. It wasn't a good day in the market. And one of the reasons is because of oil prices. And you say, well, oil prices are down. Everyone's saying oil prices are down, and it's going to it's a tax cut for consumers, which is all very true. But you have to remember, the market is global nowadays, very global. And so you have to understand where the market is coming from. What are they looking at? Well, it is good for retail stocks, and that's fine. There's issues. It's causing issues and worries for the market. And the first is global growth. And the big worry is that, yes, oil prices are going down, and that's good for the consumer, but so are other commodities like copper going down. And that's usually a sign that global growth isn't so hot. And it might signal trouble for the global economy. Number two is the high yield sector. High yield corporate bonds have come under pressure as oil prices have declined, especially the ones that are linked to leveraged shale producers and other types of energy names. And if you look at what's going on in that sector, the broad markets are kind of ignoring, it's kind of a disconnect. They're kind of ignoring what's going on. Not ignoring it completely, but it's not moving as lockstep as it used to, or typically does. And then number four is the Russian redux. Turmoil in Russia. The ruble has dropped to an all-time low against the dollar. The nation's central banks they're scrambling to respond to the currency crisis, and this is triggering reminders of the long-term capital management blow-up. Remember long-term capital management in 1998? This was linked to the Russian ruble crisis. And this goes broadly for a lot of the emerging market sectors. The 0% interest rates here in the U.S., in Japan and other developed nations, have forced investors to look abroad into higher yielding investments, usually ones that have higher risk, something we've been talking about. And then number five is bank exposure. The crisis is worrying a lot of investors, and they're saying, well, look at what happened in the oil bust of the 80s. There was a wave of bank failures across Texas in the 80s. And then this also raises concern, not just for our banks here in the United States, but also in Canada, where there's a lot of loans related to the oil industry, because their whole economy is driven on, not whole economy, but a lot of their economy is driven on oil. And this is worrying a lot of investors. Now, what are the banks that have a lot of exposure to oil here in the United States? BOKF Financial, 19% of their loans are related to the energy industry. BOKF, and they've been not doing so hot. Cullen Frost, which is a small bank. Zion Bancorp is probably the biggest. You know, they're not a giant bank, but they're a pretty big regional bank. They're about 8% of their loans. Comerica, about 7% of their loans are related to the oil industry. Regions Financial, SunTrust Bank, BB&T, Fifth Third Bank, Wells Fargo, KeyCorp, U.S. Bancorp. Those are kind of the top ones. But they all, you know, they all register kind of below that 5% mark of loans. So that it might hurt them a little bit. It shouldn't be too bad, but you could see some bank problems globally pop up, especially up there in Canada. And I think that's something that everybody needs to keep an eye on. And that is why the market's not doing so hot. You know, most people think December, it's a positive month. Well, you know, when you have oil prices going to multi-year lows, that's going to cause some shakeup in around the world in all types of sectors, not just the oil industry. Now, if you follow us on Twitter, you can get your question or comment to us by sending us a message. Our Twitter handle is at KPP Financial, or you can reach us anytime by phone at 888-99-CHART. Let's talk about it.
Why not sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider? If you missed our last webinar, a virtual retirement checklist, including easy-to-follow directions on how to use some of the new free online software, you can watch a replay when you're ready. It's there for you if you're an InvestTalk Insider, and you can sign up for free on InvestTalk.com.
Hey, guys. I listen to your show on podcast, on radio station app on my phone, and I had a general question. If you had a few mutual funds that you really like and you want to always invest in, but you're looking for general guidelines as to when you enter as the funds become available, so what do you look at in a chart? What moving averages do you use? And again, I'm only interested in when to get into, you know, a specific fund, what to look for as a guideline, 200-day moving average, 50-day moving average, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for the show, and I hope to hear myself on the podcast one of those days. Thank you.
All right, he's trying to figure out when to get in and out of, or I guess just into mutual funds and what to use for support. Now, I don't like to use the mutual fund price. I don't like to look at a chart of that. What I like to do is I want to find an ETF, a broad index that I can track. Usually there's an ETF out there that corresponds to it. And look at that, because hopefully you're buying a mutual fund that is better than the index. You're buying a mutual fund that, while the index might be hitting support, it might not quite get to support because it's doing better than the index type of thing. So I like to look at the overall index that it's that particular fund would be benchmarked against. So for example, if it's a large cap fund, then I'll just look at the S&P 500. If it's a small cap fund, I'm going to look at the Russell 2000. If it's a foreign fund, I'm going to look at the EFA, EFA. If it's a tech-related fund, I might look at the NASDAQ. What's the NASDAQ do? If it's a high-yield bond fund, well, then I might look at HYG or JNK. So that's where I start. So don't look at that particular mutual fund. And then you say, okay, where does this index over the recent period, where has it found a lot of support? What moving average has it found a lot of support? So that's what I would start thinking about. 50-day is always a good starting place. I think that's a good area. 50, 100-day, 200-day, those are basic support areas. You know, the more volatile areas of the marketplace, so I'd probably use the 100 of the 200. It's ones that, you know, areas of the investing universe that aren't that as volatile, I might use the 50-day. It just kind of depends. But yeah, I would look at a corresponding ETF related to whatever asset class that is investing in, that mutual fund is investing in. Let's go to Robin in Woodland Hills. Or just Woodland. Is it Woodland or Woodland Hills?
It's just Woodland.
Just Woodland. My yep. Family lives in Woodland Hills, so I'm prone to say Woodland Hills. But how's it going, Robin? What can I do for you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Well, I've been watching the gyrations in the market with the changes in oil prices. And one of the names I was looking at was One Oak Partners.
Okay.
And I was wondering, what do you think about that as a potential buying opportunity? Because it's been in a downtrend along with oil pretty much all year. And then it got beat up really bad a couple weeks ago and seemed to find some short-term support, maybe around 38,
mm-hmm.
take a big bounce back, drop back down again, and then kind of start moving in a little bit narrower band here, you know, around $39.
Yeah, this is One Oak. They're engaged in natural gas and natural gas liquid gathering and processing in the Rocky Mountains and mid-continent regions of the United States. This is kind of similar to NGLS with the caller before. I like that you're looking for opportunity here. I'm going to ask the same question. Are you investing? Would you buy this in? What type of account would you buy this in?
I would buy this account after tax.
After tax.
Where I would probably normally buy it in the after tax account.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then that's good.
So
I would
kind of fool around with such things and probably not like a huge portion.
Yeah.
Like 2 or 3% of this particular portfolio.
Okay. I would start to step in around $36 and really start to buy around 34. I think 33, 34, that's a good area to buy it. And I like what you're looking at. Thanks, Robin. Now we're moving to the last segment of the hour. We're going to talk to Charlie Modesto.
You're listening to our podcast produced 5 days a week, and we thank you for being here. Also, if you'd like a professional review of your retirement portfolio, even though you may live out of range of our California offices, it can still be done using email, fax, and phone. To begin the process, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Schedule a Meeting heading under Steve's picture, and someone will get right back to you.
Let's go to Charlie in Modesto. How you doing, Charlie?
Good, Justin. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
And I'm calling today about Consolidated Water. Ticker symbol is C as in Charles, W as in William, C as in Charles, O as in Ocean. And I bought about two-thirds of a position in this, had it quite a while. I've been selling covered calls against that position mm-hmm. and collecting the dividends. So between the two, I'm doing okay on the thing.
Okay.
But what it's done is it's broken support quite recently.
Yeah.
So I don't see anything in the news about what might have happened to it. I remember in the past there were times when there was unusual rainfall in the markets where they sell the desalinated water,
uh-huh.
which cut their sales.
Yeah.
And then, of course, when changed, they were back in the happy times again. So I'm wondering if you might have any information on what's going on with it. I'm thinking maybe there's a point in here to pick up some more shares.
I'm trying to find what might have gone on with it. They do operate a desalination plant. It's multiple. And water distribution systems. Earnings supposed to drop 22% this year, but go back up 38% next year. Yields about 3%, trading at about book value now. So it's definitely cheap. I'm not seeing what it is. It has been raining here in California recently pretty hard. Is that where they're located?
Their markets are the Caribbean, the high-end resorts.
Okay.
And they have some in the Middle East in high-end resorts.
Okay. Well, this It is at some pretty good support here. I'll tell you that. About $9.30 or so. It is some pretty good support. So that's the positive. Now the negative is it's in a good downtrend, and earnings are falling, and it's not particularly cheap. By any means. P 22 PE. That's not super cheap. They don't have any debt. That's positive. It's trading at book value. That's positive. Earnings were up 117% year over year, which, that's from a low base back in third quarter of 2013. So revenue was up 10%. So I don't know why it's going down. From a long-term perspective, it is a decent value from a book value perspective. Let's see what their cash flow is like. Just to see, are they burning cash? And they have positive cash flow too. Not super profitable, 5% return on equity. That's not great. At least it's positive. So to me, overall, I would say I'm slightly positive on the name. But I think you can find some better things with less risk overall.
Alrighty.
Thanks for calling, Charlie. Let's go to Mahibert. How you doing, Mahibert?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Doing well.
Thanks for taking the call.
Uh-huh.
So basically, I'm looking. I would like to ask a question. Like, what is the difference between Class A, Class B, Class C, the mutual funds? Why the expense ratios are such a different? And what scenarios a normal investor will opt for Class A, Class B, Class C?
Well, you should never buy a Class A or B or C. Well, I don't say never, because some A shares don't have a load. Usually A shares have some sort of a front-end load, 4%, 4.5%, maybe 5 or 5.5%, somewhere in that range. You never pay that. If you're paying that, you're getting hosed, you're getting taken, you're getting swindled, okay? So now not all A shares have a load. Sometimes they just are just A shares. Usually C shares are back-end loaded. B shares, sometimes there's too low. I mean, it varies between share class. But usually what you want to stick with are institutional class shares, retail class shares, where there's no load, no transaction fee. Stick with those. Never pay a load on a mutual fund. And if you want to find out if it has a load, just go to Morningstar.com, type in that symbol, and you'll see at the very top whether or not it has a load or not. All right, Mabert? Thanks for calling. Now our time is gone for the day. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KP Financial, thank you for listening, and we hope you'll be here for the next Invest Talk.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.